And maybe we'll get into the Cowboys and how awful their offense looked yesterday. Here's Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider in studio. You have some faith, though, right, in the Cowboys? You're somewhat optimistic, it seems.
No, I mean, it depends what expectations are. I think they're going to be on 9-7. Yesterday doesn't change anything. I think they're going to struggle to score all year long. But I think their D, which showed it against a potent Carolina offense yesterday, is young and athletic and quite improved. I was really impressed by that D.
Yeah. How about this? Dak Prescott's overrated.
He is right now. I mean, since his rookie year, he's not showed a lot. You know, I'm not a football expert. This is me, the Cowboys fan, talking. But I don't like what I see when he doesn't see his first read available. So that worries me. But we'll see. It's first game. You know, don't overreact.
Yeah, that's right. It's overreaction Monday. Everyone's got a crazy take.
You know, you're a Patriots fan, so you can sit there and literally sleepwalk your way through the first half of the season.
I just get worried if they win the Super Bowl or not. That's all I care about.
Oh, my goodness.
The only stress.
Listen to this guy.
Seriously, think about that. It's the only stress.
Yeah. Well, they look pretty good. All right, so Montreal finally trades Max Pacioretty. What do you make of Jeff Molson, the owner, coming out and saying he did, in fact, demand a trade or ask for a trade?
Right.
Like, why did he feel obligated to throw that nugget out?
Well, because it's, you know, it's a bit of a gong show in the market, and I think, you know, probably important for him to put out what he feels is the truth. I will tell you this, despite what everyone is saying on both sides of this, I do think there was a time last year where Max Pacioretty would have appreciated a change of scenery, okay? Let's not kid ourselves. But at the same time, I think some of that came...
Okay, but what is that, though? Is that a requesting a trade?
Right, I don't think it was official. At the same time, I think that came to that point because he realized before that his name was out there. So it's sort of semantics to me. At the end of the day, this was headed for a divorce. Let's not get carried away and lost in the who said what. These two parties needed a divorce, and they needed it, frankly, before camp started. And so that's why this trade happens. Interestingly to me, I don't know what you guys think of the deal, but I talked to a couple other front offices around the league today, and they kind of thought Montreal got a decent return. If you agree that they were basically in the corner, they already had a trade with LA fall through. They have a player who, you know, is going to be drama all year, which means you know that Montreal is trying to trade him. And at the end of the day, they got Nick Suzuki, who some people are high on. Tatar is what he is. I mean, yeah. I don't think he'll ever be more than 20-goal scorer, although they got a rebate on his salary. And a second-rounder, you know, given that team was right in a corner, you know, not a bad return.
This is what we were kind of talking about even off-air. Like, the trade to L.A., it sounds like, again, we're not privy to numbers, mm-hmm. but it didn't sound like he got anything more financially
right
from Vegas and less term. So,
because Pacioretty signed an extension with Vegas, four years at $7 million.
Yeah, so $28 million over 4 years, $7 million AAV. It's actually 10.5 right at the front, and it's front loaded and goes down to 5.25. But $7 million is the AAV. It depends on what you know. You truly believe about what happened with LA. You know, I think the Kings started at six times six is my information, which you know, I don't think Pacioretty would have ever signed, but I do think L.A. would have gone a bit higher, but I don't know that it went that far. In the middle of all this, Pacioretty changes agents from Pat Brisson to Alan Walsh, so that in the middle of nixing the deal to L.A., he's also changing agents, so a lot was going on that draft weekend in Dallas. So I guess what I would say is maybe in L.A. there would have been a longer-term deal had he stuck with that scenario, but he did get a lot of money up front in a shorter-term deal with Vegas where there's no state income tax, by the way.
Right,
so it really depends how you look at it. Yeah, yeah.
What I've not understood for a number of years from Montreal is why it seems to me they create this friction with players, mm-hmm. and then these artificial trade deadlines. Like it happened with Subban a few years ago. His no trade kicks in. We've got to trade him. Everyone knows that for whatever mm-hmm. reason they decided they got to trade him. They had to trade him, and then he gets traded. Galchenyuk, we've tried everything. Two coaches, center, wing, first line, fourth line. Got to get rid of him. And now Pacioretty, you got to get rid of him. Like why do they keep putting themselves in this position where it's like you got to trade him, mm-hmm. and then you get a haul that's okay, and it's like, well, they actually got a pretty good haul considering. Right. Well, they put themselves in that position.
Well, and that's exactly it. There's a great case to be made here, whether you want to be the glass half full or glass half empty guy when analyzing the Habs right now. For example, I can tell you that some people look at their offseason and actually say, love their first round draft pick, young center. They didn't give up the first round pick for Ryan O'Reilly, which is what the Sabres wanted. A lot of GMs who knew they might be on the firing line would have actually made that deal to save their job. He didn't. Fine. So a lot of people feel in terms of the big picture, long term, they had a decent offseason in terms of not doing anything dumb. But I think when you step back, and if you want to be Captain Negative, you got to say this. What are they right now? Who are they? A year ago, they signed Carey Price to an eight-year extension because they're still in contend now mode, right? I mean, otherwise, why would you do that? So I think if you're going to go on the negative side, you ask yourself, well, what's going on here? Are they rebuilding? They're rebuilding. They just have a goalie starting an eight-year deal at $10.5 million a year at the peak of
his
career.
Which would counter the idea that they can rebuild.
Right. So I think that's what's interesting to me. You know, Max Domi, very young player, is excited. I talked to Max last week at the player tour in Chicago. You wouldn't believe the enthusiasm coming out of him. Like, I don't know if there was a more excited player of all the players there than Max Domi. He can't wait to be on that stage. He says, I grew up with my dad being an icon in Toronto, and I relish that stage. I can't wait. So there are some interesting elements in terms of youth and some of the things they've done.
But on paper.
But exactly. This is a team that, at best, if Carey Price reestablishes himself, contends for a bubble playoff spot. That's about it.
That's how I see.
That's the ceiling, in my opinion.
I agree with you. I think on paper, they look terrible to me.
Yeah. So it feels like they've decided to sort of retool here, rebuild, whatever you want to call it.
But Pierre, what does that
mean? Where does that leave the goalie? And when Shea Weber's healthy, the anchor defenseman.
Yeah, don't they just go up to Bergevin and say, why do I want to be a part of this?
Who?
Price and Weber. Like, aren't they?
Well, what are they going to do now? I mean, you just signed the deal. Weber's got a monster deal with a lot of money left. They're going to play. They're going to give, you know, a great effort.
I think what you do if you're Carey Price and Shea Weber, and those guys are fierce, proud competitors. I know you guys know those guys, especially Shea Weber. I think you see how this year goes. At some point, Weber's back in the second half. If they surprise people and contend, do you leave in the offseason next summer saying, okay, who knows? I mean, the league is close. Vegas just went to the Stanley Cup final. So Colorado just made the playoffs a year after they should have been relegated if it was European soccer. It is a funny league. I'm just saying. I mean, we always sit here and we're, you know, a year ago at this point, if we would have said Colorado made the playoffs, what would have been your reaction?
Yeah, it's asinine.
I'm just saying, we it's radio, so you love to have a strong opinion because that's what you guys get paid for, especially Noodles and O-Dog. But I'm just saying, it is a league now where the margin of error, the gap between the good teams and the bad teams is smaller than ever. Who knows? Stay healthy, get a break. Carey Price stands on his head. He can make up for a lot of deficiencies on that team. Let's see how the year goes. But I do think next summer, going into the offseason next year, I think that organization has to probably look at where Price and Weber fit into this overall picture here.
Where does this situation, like this, Pacioretty's gone, Subban's gone, there's been a lack of success of late. Mm-hmm. Where does this put Mark Bergevin in this whole situation?
I mean, listen, I think you have to think he enters the season on thin ice, for sure. I think some people thought...
But what does that mean? Everybody knows what they have now. We all discussed that they're probably going to fight for a playoff spot. Yeah, so what are the expectations?
Yeah.
So what, if they don't do that, he'll get fired?
No, I think, again, it. Yeah, I mean, I think if you're another year out, if you don't feel, if you're Jeff Molson, that the pieces that are coming in are going to put you over the hump in terms of, okay, I could see what you're doing here 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Like I said, people feel they had a great draft. But these are, you're talking about things, Suzuki, not helping you today, right? I mean, these are things for 2-3 years down the road here.
I think Brian made a good point in our last hour about Jeff Molson being very involved.
Yeah, he talks too much. He's like, I know you're the owner, you have the right, but just...
But even not even talking, I think he's the guy who's involved.
He's
like Daryl Cates in Edmonton. I think there's guys that are involved. And I come back to a situation where it's more like, do you remember in Philadelphia, like Paul Holmgren would make these big splashes and some of them would work. You know, Briz Galoff, no go. And his job was never in jeopardy because it seemed like it was coming down from farther up.
And these markets, Noodles, as you know from playing in Calgary, when times are good, you talk to players, oh my gosh. When the Habs were 100-point teams 3 out of 4 years just a few years ago, those guys were so happy to be there in that atmosphere, in that rink.
Yeah.
You know, now it's the Leafs feeling that fun. When the Canucks were on their cup run, when the Flames went to the cup final, Edmonton. But when things are bad, it's just two extremes in Canada, man. It's just... Things get overblown. I mean, when the Leafs were the 18-wheeler going off the cliff for a few years, that was happening in other markets, but it was happening in Toronto, so it was a bigger deal. And you guys hammered them harder than I think another team in the in a smaller market for the same things, but that's how it is. So now Montreal's going through that, right? I mean, at the end of the day, Montreal's not going to finish last in the league. There's going to be teams that are going to be worse than them, but maybe not that many teams more scrutinized than them this year.
Pierre Lebrun, Hockey Insider in studio. You mentioned the Leafs. I mean, it's all jubilation. It's all good times. They kick off camp on Thursday. They're on the ice on Friday. The only potential storm cloud is William Nylander. What's up with his situation? I mean, it seems to be a moving target every day. Everyone's got a different take on how it's going to play out, why it'll play out. Mm-hmm. What are you hearing? What do you make of it?
Both sides really tight-lipped trying to keep this a lid on this, but clearly I think I don't think things have gone as smoothly as you would want in that negotiation to this point. I mean, that's normal. You got a veteran agent in Lewis Gross who's negotiating a deal with a first-time GM doing his first deal. So if I'm an agent, I want to test those limits, see what's going on there with Kyle Dubas. Mm-hmm. I think that's normal. My understanding is Kyle Dubas and the Leafs front office has kind of painted a picture for everyone involved, whether it's Nylander, Matthews, Marner, Jake Gardiner. Everyone has an understanding of what his vision is in terms of where everyone kind of fits, and we want to build, keep this thing going and win cups, and i.e. read between the lines, you know, if we pay all of you what you think you can bear on the market, then that's not going to work. I think that message has sort of been parlayed.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that leave Nylander? Unfortunately for him, he's the first one at it between all those guys, and I think that puts him in a tough spot because, you know, I think the Leafs want him at a certain number. When I talked to people around the league, I did it today, a lot of people have him pegged at between 6 and 6.4 as something reasonable when you look at the comps around the league for guys his age and his production.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, yeah. I think I can only assume that the ask has started higher than that for sure from the Nylander camp. So we'll see where that goes.
Do you think there could be a potential complication with maybe the wording in the contract, specifically no trades, no movements? Like, I don't think Nylander, his name's been out there a lot. I could see him fighting for a no-trade clause.
Well, he can't get one right away is I'm sure, going to be part of the issue, right? You're not allowed to have a no-trade till you're UFA-eligible age. So I'm sure part of the fear, if I were them, is that, okay, let's say you buy into this. And if I were the Leafs, I'd be doing the same thing, I think, is that, you know, for this to all fit, all of you, you know, this is the number that works.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. So what if I take that deal in Toronto, but then I'm traded? Because he can't get a no trade until his first year of eligibility for UFA age. So you're naked early on, right? That contract becomes enticing to another team.
Right.
Because now you've taken the, you know, I'm going to use
discounts.
I'm going to use a Rick Curran, the agent for Ryan Ellis, talked about Nashville dollars to me in a column I wrote on the Ryan Ellis negotiation. That's what Nashville sells. If you're signing here, you're signing for Nashville dollars, which are lower than NHL dollars because you want to win and you love living in Nashville.
And
Nashville does it great. I mean, you've looked at that payroll, it's unbelievable.
Everything
but they
seems
get
to work
it done.
Out, yeah.
So I think the Leafs are going to sell the Leafs dollars, and that's fine. But I'm sure the fear for Nylander and his agent is, well, if I sign the Leafs dollars, I better be sure I'm still a Leaf. And so I think this is all part of these conversations.
You can't have that guarantee, though.
Well, you're not allowed. As per the CBA,
you don't have it until you're allowed.
You
want to say, oh, I'm going to make sure I'm a Canadian, and they traded him.
Exactly.
There's never that guarantee in sports.
But PK Subban didn't give Canadian dollars. He took $9 million a year.
So right. He got
that worked out for him.
Well, if you're the Leafs, I think the more important message is you better make sure that you establish yourself as a guy who's worth that kind of money. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm a big fan of Nylander. He's loaded with talent, back-to-back 60-point seasons.
But if he's asking for more than $6 million, then...
Well, he's not going to get it. Like, the way I see this playing out...
He doesn't deserve it either.
No. I mean, deserve is a subjective term, but... I think if I'm Dubas, I put forth a reasonable offer. I mean, if it's 6 years at $6.25 million, that's a good offer.
Mm-hmm.
That's not shortchanging him. That's not disrespecting him. And I hang up the phone. I say, you call me when you're willing to take it.
So there's
and
different
if it's
2 weeks
into the season, so to speak. Right. So
like Nikolai Ehlers signed for $6 million a year times 7 years. Now again, terms a big part of this. You got to be careful. Like,
right.
A 2 year bridge deal is a different figure than a 6-7.
Because then he's still an RFA if he does that.
Right. But you know, Ehlers got $6 million a year. Some people think that's on the lower end. Again, Winnipeg has their own culture going over there in terms of the contract they got Scheifele signed to, my goodness. But David Pastrnak got $6.66 million a year ago. You know, 2 years ago, Johnny Gaudreau, I think, got $6.75 million. Philip Forsberg, 3 years ago, got $6.6 million. Now, that contract's dated now. Right. Every year there's inflation.
But if you're...
But a lot of these guys, if you look at their numbers then, in terms of when they were negotiating, similar to Nylander.
But if you rank those players right now, where would Nylander be?
Who did you just mention? Gaudreau, Forsberg,
Pastrnak,
Ehlers.
He's last.
Ehlers.
No, he's him and Ehlers are on the same par. Right, I think there. You could.
Okay, they're the bottom two of that pack.
Yeah, right. Gaudreau and Pastrnak are better players.
Mm-hmm. Right, but that's that again.
Also, Pierre older said, deals.
Older deals, and at that time in their career.
Right,
right.
But right now, Nylander has an opportunity.
Right.
On a very skilled team, to inflate his worth, because we were just talking about it, like. You know, Max Domi in Arizona, as opposed to, or Jonathan Duran here in Toronto playing with Tavares and Matthews. Mm-hmm. And like, that's the one thing that scares me for Nylander. You wait and wait, and all of a sudden, you know how Babs works. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to find somebody else to slide in there.
Well,
and all of a sudden, you're not going to get the points and the great looks and all of that. You're on the third line or fourth line. Like, that's just how Babs works.
That's why I think the Leafs are in such a strong position of leverage here.
Position, mm-hmm.
Is
for sure.
if they were an awful team and Nylander was the best player, people in the city would be going nuts.
For sure.
And they'd be yelling at Dubas to smarten up and pay him and get him in here. But that's not going to be the case.
In fact, you don't hear any of that really.
None.
On social media. There seems to be this, let this young GM do his thing, seems smart, seems like he's got a plan.
Right.
No question.
And why wouldn't you want to be here? Figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's a business, and people lose sight of that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I found it interesting that Tavares came out today and said, we expect him here for camp. Now, maybe it was just a throwaway comment, but it was like, that's interesting. Like, new guy, you got paid, and you're saying you expect this kid to make sure that he's in camp on time.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe he knows something we don't know.
And it's anecdotal, and it's one moment in a day, but I got to say, in the sit-down that we did at the Athletic with John Tavares last Friday, unbelievably comfortable in his skin about life as a Leaf already. Like, just long, detailed, thoughtful answers about different topics. I asked him about the captaincy and a number of other things, so the rest of my colleagues, the Athletic, and he is just dialed in for what's coming here. This is not going to catch him off guard in terms of needing to be a guy every single day, whereas he didn't have to do that with the Islanders, that has to have an opinion on something and be part of the face of this franchise. I came away impressed by, I think, the fact that he put a lot of thought. It wasn't just signing with the Leafs July 1st. It was, what would my life be like? And clearly, he put some thought into that.
Right, and he embraced it in the end.
Yeah. And by the way, like, I know a lot of people, I know you guys have talked about it, think that Tavares, you know, he doesn't really care about the captaincy, you know, who cares what happens with that. Not the impression I got. I mean, he would support Austin Matthews 100%. But it's clear to me when we asked him about it that it's something that he would also dig into if he was asked.
Yeah.
In other words, I don't think he's going to go into that office and say, let me diffuse this by just saying, just don't even give it to me. I don't think he would do that.
Which I appreciate, because for a long time, the captaincy felt like a burden in this city because the team wasn't any good. You know, the organization didn't protect the players. We're talking specifically about Phaneuf. And it felt like it was a burden in a lot of ways. And I would probably feel the same way if I was stuck in that room losing games and people throwing jerseys on the ice.
Yeah.
Now everything's reversed.
Yeah.
Now you got guys who are pining to be the captain. You know, they can say whatever they want publicly. I think that'd be an incredible honor. Why would you not want to be the captain of this team?
Yeah.
That'd be a great honor. And Tavares has done it before. You know, if he got it today, he'd step right in and be very comfortable with it. Matthews, it would be an adjustment. He's never been a captain at the NHL level.
Mm-hmm.
Tavares has done it for 8 years or 9 years. You wrote another piece last week speaking with anonymous sources throughout the league. Little New York Times op-ed-esque in The Athletic about how people feel about the Leafs and kind of a variety of answers or what?
Yeah, it's the only way you can get the unvarnished truth from them, because otherwise if they do it on the record, everything's positive. So, I talked to a number of front office guys and coaches around the league. For the most part, it was very positive. But there were some interesting comments, as you saw there, Brian. I mean, if the guys who were seeing it half empty wondered about the pressure in this market now, after Vegas named them the favorite to win the cup, and how it might be hard on this team. Other guys talked about, you know, Mike Babcock's relationship with some of the younger players, you know, and obviously the defense was probably the most prevalent one. But at the end of the day, I love the comment I got from one Western Conference GM. He said, "Are you kidding me? Look who they have down the middle. They are going to outscore everyone almost every night." And he was emphatic. Like, who cares if they can't defend, like, the 95 Devils? They're going to have the puck. They're going to score a ton of goals.
They should.
You know? But, again, I would say this. I'm surprised that one thing didn't come up that I thought would come up, and that's Freddie Anderson. Not, you know, I'm one of his biggest fans, but what concerned me is the workload that he had last year.
Yeah.
And how I think he ran out of gas, in my opinion. And I think this year, there, to me, you have to make sure that you play Freddie Anderson fewer games during the regular season, in my opinion.
Well, if even if it's a couple less, just less stress. And that comes down to a talented team that actually, you know, controls the puck more, but plays. This is, I said this to Brian and O, I think, last week, saying this is where Mike Babcock actually makes his money. Mm-hmm. Because now they've put in a place, a really good team, but it doesn't have to be the Olympic model where he got them to win 1-0 every night, but they have to have a system that protects the goaltender, doesn't stress. You can't be 27th and 28th in shots against and have Freddie play 66 games and go, okay, this guy's going to be fresh as a daisy.
Right.
Whether you have McElhinney or Sparks, because that is one of the battles at training camp, I think 60-65 is a fine number, but it can't be nights where, there can't be multiple nights where there's 40-plus shots against.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think it stresses a goaltender, and it gets to a point where it just chips away and wears him down. And, you know, knock on wood, health-wise, he's had pretty good health the last couple of years, so you get an opportunity where, you know, he faces 28 shots in a game or 26 and they win 4-2 or 1.
Give
whatever.
Him some nights off, even though he's playing.
Yeah, exactly.
And it seems like an odd thing to say now that the Caps have won the Cup, but what's funny about the level of energy that Braden Holtby had in his Cup run is that part of it was that he lost his job for a while to Grubauer.
Yeah.
And it's funny, the silver lining that came out of it. A, that, you know, he had to sort of re-energize himself and rejig himself, but also, frankly, Holtby had a less of a busy season workload wise than he normally does because Grubauer stepped up. And guess what happened? Holtby played his best playoff hockey ever. I don't know if there's a correlation. I think about the years Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury get the.
I was just going to say that. The last three cups, there's been flips.
I don't know. You know,
yeah. Even when the Hawks last one, Corey Crawford went in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, yeah, you might be onto something. All right, Pierre. Good seeing you, man. Thanks for popping
in. Good to be back. Go Cowboys.
You got it. Go Pack. Go Pats. Go Argos. Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider in studio.